SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, about 10 minutes in, Sid Fernando is going to join us after a rollicking visit with Paul Matisse. I so much fun. And I'm always so grateful to have access to people like Paul and Duke. And they have really been forthcoming in terms of how they present what really amounts to as high a level of play
as there is
by anybody, by any players that are in the game. And I've joked before that there was a mystique about the Matisses, and the fact that they've become so much a part of the national racing scene, and just kind of taken to the role, because for a long time they really bypassed or were not that interested in the spotlight. And they're funny, they're just as authentic as can be, and it's a rare treat that we all get to hear. And you can hear Paul, particularly with the Duke has got the hard and fast opinions. With Paul you can kind of hear the way in which he's thinking about a horse and is massaging the impressions and then integrating those cumulative, like shuffling a deck of cards. And one thing we haven't had as much of an opportunity, we talk about the process, and we've talked occasionally when I've asked Paul about and Duke about leveraging their bankroll, and that's an invaluable portion. But the most important lesson, really, from them is how you can't be dissuaded from your approach, and you can't lose confidence in what you know in your heart and what you've seen has been a successful execution in your handicapping and wagering strategies. And they understand as well or maybe better than the vast majority of players at any level that there's going to be occasions where the vagaries of the game, these are animals, the vagaries of the game and the things that influence outcomes, there's only a certain percentage of that's in our control as players. And you can rue certain outcomes that didn't go your way, but there is not one second of time spent upset about it that's worthwhile. You go on to the next opportunity. And that's something I see from them that is so invaluable to to players that are feeling out their way and their evolution and development as players. It's not that you were wrong. You were probably right. But that doesn't mean that the outcome has to match your opinion. And you can't get the smoke screens that are out there. You and the haze, particularly in this internet era, of people, you know, congratulating themselves and reminding you how smart they are on the internet every 10 minutes. Don't let any of that, you know, take away from your focus and your confidence in yourself. So that's a message beyond the obvious handicapping. And the same could be said of breeders and the way they approach things. And, you know, certainly John and Tanya Gunther, not every horse that they that they conceived on paper between the dams and sires, not every one became Justify and Vino Rosso. These two happened to. And Sid Fernando, that's been his life work as well. And Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent.
That was a very eloquent monologue, I must say.
Very kind. Thank you.
As a matter of fact, while listening to you, I was wondering, when did you actually get into radio? Was it in your college years or afterwards?
It was college. It was, when I went to Colgate, there were two things I wanted to do. I wanted to be in a play, and I wanted to get on the radio.
Get in the play.
I did get in the play. Don't Drink the Water. Axel McGee, the Woody Allen role in Don't Drink the Water as the ambassador's son, the bumbling ambassador's son.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Falls in love with Walter Hollander's daughter there. If you don't remember, Don't Drink the Water, the American family that gets stuck in the embassy, and very, very funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I landed on the radio, and you know, I did a music show for a while, but I wanted to be on sports, and I started out as the statistician for the football broadcasts, and then doing the same thing for hockey until a trip to Vermont and New Hampshire. And I used to go on the bus with the team, and I carried the equipment. And the play-by-play guys and the color man at that time, Mark Herr, Jim Joyce, and I forget who was the third, their car broke down on the way to New Hampshire. And here I am in the arena with the equipment. And I grabbed Drew Schaefer, Suggs, the third string goalie, who was high as a kite. And I grabbed him as a color man, and he and I broadcast the 10-0 demolition. New Hampshire killed us. And that was the New Hampshire team.
You never know when you're going to be called upon to suit up, and you did.
Well, that was it, and we had a riot, and that was the New Hampshire team, for those of you that are college hockey fans, that featured Francis, Roy, Gould, and Cox, and, of course, some of the members of the U.S. Olympic hockey team in 1980, and that was the start, and I guess I did okay doing the play-by-play because they couldn't get rid of me at that point. So,
Wow, so began the story of Mr. Bick and radio.
Then out of college, Sid, I didn't take a job. They were so. It was 1982, and the offers ranged from $7,800 a year to about $9,000.
Yeah,
and I couldn't look my parents in the face after they had paid for a college education. I'm going to take a job for $7,800. that didn't go over too well. So I ended up selling towels for Cannon Mills.
Oh really?
Yeah. Went to North Carolina and got trained, and then actually the Time Life Building was our offices in New York, and worked out of the Time Life Building, and stayed with my aunt in Roslyn, and used to be literally the madman style commute on the Long Island Railroad. You'd get into the station, Sid, and you get get a manicure and get your shoes shined and get a trim. Pretty fun experience, actually, and I'm glad my first day on the job at Canon, they give you a mentor, and you're taught when you're leaving college, do this and that. And so we went to lunch the first day, and my mentor, he said, "What do you want to drink?" And I said, "I'll take an iced tea." And he literally ordered three martinis. Oh. It was the three martini lunch in living color. And I said, "You know what? I'll have a beer."
Yeah, I remember lunches back then, too. I mean, there was a guy we used to work with. He was like a supervisor. The joke was, after lunch, do not light a cigarette around him because he could go up. Of course, back then was in the days when you could smoke in the office.
Absolutely. It's a bygone era in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Well, the horses, though, meanwhile, they go as fast then now as they did then, and we're looking at another Triple Crown attempt, Sid. It's all the same questions, all the pedigree issues that come to bear, particularly at the true classic trip, a mile and a half. And I'll hand this over to you to evaluate this group.
Well, it's this race is unique first because it's the first and only race for 3-year-olds on dirt, grade one at a mile and a half. But as as everyone knows, sometimes this race isn't, would you like to say, a truly run race, in the sense that sometimes you'll find that the Derby with a more serious pace scenario turns out to be a truly run race. Steve, you've had horses. I'll go back to, I think it was 76 when Bold Forbes was coming into this race. And I use Bold Forbes because his internal fractions, early fractions in the Derby kind of matched Justifies. And then in the Preakness, he got into a crazy speed duel with Honest Pleasure. I think went 45-109, lost that race, the Elocutionist, but he hung on for third. And then Laz Barrera, when he brought him for the Belmont, it was pretty much understood this was a real speed horse, but he won the Derby, And so the way he prepared him, and as a contrast to these days, is he galloped his horse 2 miles all the time just to put as much bottom as he could into it. And knowing that the race was, he was going to control the speed, and knowing that, he just needed to try to get this mile and a half, he got easy fractions early and just held on. I believe it was a horse named Mackenzie Bridge that ran second. But, that was a case where the easier internal fractions allowed him to actually stay a trip longer than where he'd been beaten in the Preakness, and of course he'd won the Belmont. So it's really a case in this race, if you question Justifies, pedigree for a mile and a half, what he can do early on, and that's going to be the key here, Steve. What's your impression of some of these horses or any candidate to try to carve it up early to make it a more truly run race? Do you have any opinion on that?
Only to know that the obvious horses that look like they have natural gait speed and will be into stride,
and I don't think there's any, you know, there's any particular shocker, you know, when you look at whoever it is, Noble Indy, it feels like Gronkowski wants to be at least near, at the very least. After that, I suppose, you know, I suppose based on Bravazo's Preakness trip, you know, he wants to set up behind the speed. And knowing Baffert and the way we have seen him approach, particularly the, you know, the obvious assignments, whether it's a Triple Crown race or Travers and Pegasus and World Cup. I mean, it didn't work out this way for Arrogate in his World Cup. He spotted the field, but you do get the sense that Mike Smith will break running and gain position, come off the rail. We've seen him do this time and again, go to about the 2.5 path. And if somebody wants to storm to the lead, he can let him. And he can, if he wants a target, and if nobody is apparent in the first, you know, in the first 150 yards, 200 yards, opening furlong, I think he'll be very comfortable setting a measured pace. And, you know, that's the way a lot of Triple Crowns have been won.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, people forget that once a horse, you know, is able to slow everything down on the front end, it really adversely impacts horses that come from behind. And, you know, there's always this feeling that people get that a fast closing horse in the Derby or the Preakness, they just say, wait till the Belmont and, you know, we'll get them there. And what we've found repeatedly is that these closers get compromised trying to close off at fast, at a slower pace. So there's some horses that are bred for this trip. You know, take a horse like Free Drop Billy, for example. I mean, by Union Rags, out of Trenta by Giants Causeway. Union Rags, of course, won the Belmont. The dam is also the dam of the European G1 winner, the Kitten's Joy Colt Hawkbill, who won at 1.25 miles. You know, stays in Europe 1.25 miles. This colt is, you know, really bred for the trip. He's going to need some pace up front, though. And that's when, you know, when you're handicapping this race, you're just going to have to come up with your conclusions about what you think how you think the race is going to unravel, because this horse is bred for this trip. Probably the best pedigree for the trip. He's got a terrific pedigree. Is the type of horse that had enough form at 2 that you would have projected some really big things at 3. Hasn't been quite as sharp, but if you're waiting for a race where he's, you know, got a pedigree to support the structure of this race, it's this race, and it's this pedigree. So he's a horse that, you know, I think, depending on how the race unravels, he's going to have a really good shot to finish in the top 4. The horse you mentioned, Bravazo, and his pedigree is also worth discussing, because he's my awesome again out of Tizzo Gold by C's Tizzy. A couple of things here that are very interesting aside from his form, which everybody knows. But unlike Free Drop Billy, he's got a really weak female family.
Weak for the distance.
He's really, I'm sorry?
Weak for the trip.
Yeah, I'm just weak in terms of black type.
Okay.
You know, in terms of when I say weak, there's not a lot of black type. Bravazo, for example, is the only notable horse under the first three dams. However, look at the way the pedigree is constructed. As I said, he's by Awesome Again out of the Seas Tizzy Mare. And this is the same cross as Painter, who's by Awesome Again out of the Seas Tizzy Mare. Second in this race, as a matter of fact, to Union Rags. It's also the same cross of Oxbow, who won the Preakness. Awesome Again, Seas Tizzy Mare. It's a great cross. It's a cross that's kind of really shown success at distances of a mile and 3/16 and up. Awesome Again was a horse that got a trip, and so was C's Tizzy, the sire of Tiz Now. Shown that he could sire that type of horse as well. So this cross, the way this horse has been running, and Wayne Lucas is not above trying to be a guy who can spoil something, and so it's possible that he understands the it's not possible. He obviously understands the makeup of this race. I wouldn't be surprised, Steve, this horse being pushed along real early, much more than he was even in the Preakness, where everybody thought the other colt, Sporting Chance, who's actually by Tiz Now, was going to be on the lead. That was Lucas's other horse. I think this horse is actually going to be pushed along, and I think Lucas is going to try to take it to justify early. And so, this horse does have the structure as well to stay. And so that's going to be an interesting issue with him as well. A couple of the others, of course, when you talk about Hoffberg, you talk about Tappet. And as everyone knows, Tappet is the sire of three of the last four Belmont Stakes winners. So just on sire alone, besides the fact that Hoffberg has got a tremendous family bred for the trip as well, you've got to consider him, of course. He's a lighter race horse, and his odds just kind of reflect that people like him, and he's going to be a player in it. But pedigree wise, he's a horse that on paper looks every bit as possible to place. And of course, Vino Rosso, he's a horse that, as you pointed out in the beginning, remarkable story for the Gunthers, John D. Gunther and his daughter Tanya Gunther, bred him as well as Justify. They were in the same paddocks, I guess, the Gunthers also have a nice Frankel colt in Europe, a 3-year-old without parole. Remarkable success for a small breeder, with Broodmare Band. I think it's less than 20 from what I've read. Tanya Gunther, is a real pedigree aficionado and expert and student. She plans these matings. Their horses tend to be, they tend to go to good sires, in this case, Curlin, in the case of Justify Scat Daddy. They also tend to be not only well-mated intellectually, which I'll get to that point in Vino Rosso's pedigree in a second, but also extremely well-matched physically. So these are breeders that are looking at both the pedigree as well as the physicals of the animals they're breeding, the horses they're breeding. And it's been a great combination, and they're achieving a lot of success. Vino Rosso sold for $410,000, Justify sold for $500,000. Let me just tell you something about this particular pedigree. It's Vino Rosso by Curlin, of course, who's already had a Belmont Stakes winner, Palace Malice, out of a Street Cry mare. And, of course, Street Cry has had a Derby winner in Street Sense. He's got the good staying Hall of Fame mare, Zenyatta, or Hall of Fame candidate, Zenyatta. Distance is not a problem for this pedigree, and there's a really interesting thing in here. There's inbreeding again in this particular family, in this particular pedigree, the deputy minister, Tanya Gunther, when she was planning this, must have obviously thought of that, because that deputy minister inbreeding, particularly for horses by Curlin, it has been really potent. It was in the pedigree, for example, of Keen Ice as well, the Travers winner. So it's an extremely well-planned mating, and he's a really good candidate here. I think upset possibility. Todd Pletcher takes his ninth in the Derby, bypasses the Preakness, and comes here, and you know, this colt has a really good shot, I think, to spring an upset as well.
You referenced there's two names to reference that are getting just a tremendous amount of attention, and obviously Tappet and this spate of success in this race, and mm-hmm. whether it go back to last year and last couple of years, Creator and Tappet. In this particular group of 10, beside Hofburg mm-hmm. being by Tappet, you do have right. Tenfold out of the Tappet mare, and you've got Restoring Hope out of the Tappet mare, the Gary and Mary West homebred by Giants Causeway, who, along with, as you talked earlier with Free Drop Billy, Restoring Hope is bred top and bottom for the trip. You know, Giants Causeway absolutely. Out of the Tappet yeah. mare.
Mm-hmm. And he's a horse that's got some speed, too.
Absolutely, he's got speed. And I think is coming into this really underappreciated. And, of course, he's got the light resume, but I see people just glossing over him, and I think it's a mistake. And same thing with Free Drop Billy. Yesterday, Zoe and Rich Migliori kind of scoffed at me. I picked him third, and I know that Dale Romans, you don't finish third in this race four times and not know what kind of horse can perform here admirably. So a horse bred exactly like this right. has every reason. Sid, address for philosophy, breeding philosophy purposes and practice, mm-hmm. what the positioning of Tappet as the sire represents versus what influence it provides as the broodmare sire.
That's good. Yes. Frequently what you have, Steve, is some situations where scenarios where, for example, a sire might be a good sire himself, but his sons, you start to notice, don't carry on, and so the sire line aspect of him might diminish, or you could project it to diminish. And I'm talking in general, not a Tappet, but just as a philosophy. But the broodmare component of him as a broodmare sire continues on. Now, the perfect example of that is Secretariat. Secretariat, his sire line never continued forward. He was it's underappreciated sometimes just because of what a great horse he was, that he doesn't get the accolades he should as a sire. He actually sired some very good horses, including Risen Star, Lady Secret, of course, for Wayne Wilkins. But he's never quite accorded that. And through the years, it was evident that his sire line, his sons, were not going to become sires of sires, and his male line, so to speak, ended up dying. Now, on the female side of things, because he was a Triple Crown winner, particularly, everybody knows he was given just the cream of the crop of mares. And so with those rich female families, which means families that produced a lot of black type winners and stuff, you could almost project that his daughters would end up becoming really good broodmares, because families that are rich in stakes productions tend to be the families that consistently produce stakes winners. And that's exactly what did happen with Secretariat. He became an extraordinary broodmare sire and a broodmare sire of sires. In other words, his daughters produced horses that became outstanding stallions as well. Stormcat is a great example of that. Gone West, there are numerous. So in that philosophy, that's one profile of what can happen as a sire versus a broodmare sire. On the other side, you have a horse like a Mr. Prospector that does become a sire of sires, a tremendous stallion, and his daughters are also excellent producers. So there's a case where you have both cases, the sire line continuing and his daughters producing as well. And then you have another case where you could just have a sire really becoming a great sire, but his daughters perhaps aren't as prolific so far. And if you look at Tappet, and I was getting back to you with Tappet, Tappet is an outstanding stallion, and he probably is lagging a little bit so far in terms of his daughters producing top horses. And if you remember the example I gave with Secretariat, you can perhaps predict it when you analyze Tappet, because unlike Secretariat, Tappet went to stud unheralded, 15, 12, 5 type of stud fees. He didn't get great mares, meaning mares with a lot of big family stakes production like Secretariat did. So those first few crops, quite a few crops, 5, 6 crops, first few 3, 4, 5 crops of horses are going to be the fillies from those crops are not going to have the big heavyweight pedigrees behind them. So therefore, when his first daughters have gone to stud and are producing, they're producing horses without a lot of stakes heft behind them. Now, can you imagine that scenario? Secretariat's daughters go to stud, and they've got these huge families behind them, right? Tappet's first daughters go to stud, and they're very light pedigrees. So in a numbers game, you can almost kind of predict that the first Tappet mares, what they do, they're going to have to do on their own without the benefit of family. ironically, what made Tappet such a great sire was that Tappet was able to take these white type pedigrees, white type meaning pedigrees without black type, and dominate them. If you look at Hansen, for example, one of his best early horses, Hansen was like the first stakes winner in that family for five or six generations. You know, and the dam was a claimer. So as a sire, he dominated these types of pedigrees, but when his daughters go to stud, you can understand, you know, that they might be a little slower, because once, you know, ultimately families are behind the production of behind the real success of a dam's production. And so that's something that's the philosophical as well as the intellectual interpretation of some of these things, and certainly addresses Tappet right now.
When something occurs with a stallion the way things have occurred for Tappet, where, you know, it just becomes an inferno from a brush fire.
Yeah.
Does it make, you know, even unsuccessful runners, females in particular, obviously, desirable? I mean, is it worthwhile trying virtually any Tappet mare?
Well, that's a great question too. So you might have a Tappet mare with not a lot of black type in the family. You know, it's nice to have that Tappet part to it, but you'll find that there's two components to it. If you're going to breed from that mare, excuse me, commercially, despite having the Tappet, you're just going to get hammered in the sales ring commercially, because the commercial catalog page lists the black type of horses under the second, third, fourth, fifth dams, you know. And when breeders see not much black type, even with a marquee name like Tappet on top, it's not going to work out. And if you compare Tappet, by the way, to Medaglia d'Oro, Medaglia d'Oro has started off his career as a broodmare sire better than Tappet. Both of these are, by the way, in their infancy as broodmare sires. But, of course, Medaglia d'Oro started off at a $40,000 stud fee versus, you know, 15 for Tappet. He got better mares earlier. So, you know, there's comparison there. But to answer your question, I think ultimately it's a red herring, because it's very rare for a broodmare who's by a top stallion without the pedigree behind her to succeed as a broodmare. Tappet, as a sire, was able to do it, but it's much tougher on his daughters.
Yeah, it's always interesting when, and I think of Lauren Stitch and the way she, at least for maybe it was just a question of timing and reading about pedigree, you know, the way Lauren very adeptly identified potential stallions that were going to have, you know, she identified the hidden turf, it was her term, and right. It's always amazing. And this is why breeding is fascinating and compelling. When horses do things that weren't going to be obvious when the stallion went to stud, and qualities manifest themselves, and you know, it's the whole genealogy and the mechanics of animal husbandry in this case that is fascinating. And the story writes itself. I mean, it's basically, Sid, a case of the stallion forcing himself upon the breed.
Yeah, that's a great phrase, and that's the kind of thing that applies. You know, when you think of a northern dancer, that just applies so well to him. And then if you take a look at his son Danzig, kind of fits exactly what you said. Danzig, three starts, sprints on dirt, but his métier was to sire horses. Really, his true calling was turf milers. And his son Warfront then went and raced on dirt again. But when Warfront went to stud again for like tapping for like, you know, 12.5 or whatever, guess what? We're finding that the Warfronts are turf milers. And there's two generations there. Danzig raced on dirt, went to stud, really made his name as a sire of turf milers. One of his last sons, Warfront, races on dirt, not turf, goes to stud and becomes his tremendous elite sire of turf horses. So, you know, a couple of lessons from that is you never know what a stallion might do based on his own race record, which just shows you the power of what a pedigree can eventually exert on a stallion, you know? And two, opportunity plays a major role in it. And the opportunity to use the example with Northern Dancer. Northern Dancer was obviously a Derby winner, a Preakness winner, lost the Belmont dirt horse. Well, the opportunity presented itself in the form of Nijinsky, who Engelhard took to Europe to Vincent O'Brien, and he became a Triple Crown winner. In fact, he's the last British Triple Crown winner, Nijinsky. And once that happened, Vincent O'Brien with John Magnier later, in fact, the Vincent O'Brien, John Magnier combination got the Minstrel, the first Epsom Derby winner for John Magnier in that partnership group. And that story, you know, sort of like your hockey story, Northern Dancer happened to be in the right place at the right time for these European guys. And they just came and took everything, and they established what he became known for, and that is European classic winners on turf. And that history is still in effect today, from his son Sadler's Wells to his son Galileo, and now Galileo's sons like Frankel and New Approach, who sired this year's Epsom Derby winner, Massar. So really, Steve, it's amazing how, you know, fortuitous luck can be in determining the career path of the stallion as well.
I'm glad you referenced the Derby as well, and that storyline with Saxon Warrior. There'd been a lot of speculation going into Saturday that we might have the potential for dueling Triple Crowns. So I don't know if that's a harbinger or if it's just incidental, but I'm glad
and
you
fit that in. It's also interesting that both of them drew post one.
I hadn't thought about
and
that.
And of
You're
course,
right.
Coolmore is going to be associated with this horse because it's been, you know, obviously reported that they purchased the breeding rights to the horse. So they're going to be standing Saxon Warrior. They're going to be standing Justified.
That an interesting. I'm not going to I'm not going to comment because I've been pretty open about kind of rooting for a win by this horse on Saturday.
You instantly root for the horse, but you bet against him.
That's exactly what we've been espousing pretty much. It's right. So, yeah. Well, Sid, final analysis here, focused in on Free Drop Billy, Vino Rosso, Hofburg, and Bravazo from the pedigree play. Is that the right?
Yeah, right. And quadrant? if you want to really tighten it and get the biggest bang for the buck, I'm going to even reduce it to Free Drop Billy and Bravado.
Interesting. All right. Very good. Very good. I was a little ambivalent on Bravado, and what he has going for him is certainly this pattern that is very established with Lucas. Usually, yeah. when horses, and of course they're running. He's got Warriors Club this weekend as well. Horses that make it through the Lucas Gauntlet, the march or die approach, and Warriors Club was aptly named because he has not only made it through to the other side, he is thriving, with the heavy hand that Lucas puts upon
these
runners.
That heavy hand was very evident in Will Take Charge.
Yes.
Really got good at around this type of, this time of year.
Yep.
And if this is that horse that has passed, that is able to survive Lucas's heavy hand, you might have something.
Well, and I can tell you that, having seen, the Derby lead-ups, and there's any number of, including Dublin, who, by all rights, he must have been as tough a horse as we've seen in recent memory, because he powered through, what looked like handling that was going to leave him by the wayside, frankly, and he shook it off. And I'm kind of waiting for his horses to, start to show some ability. And you've said something too that I made a mental note. Not going to do it today, but I did see where Americaine, speaking of Bravado and Calumet, Americaine got his first stake winner over the weekend.
Yeah, Americaine got his first stakes winner, and of course, Bravado owned by Brad Kelly's Calumet, and Brad Kelly has kind of got an oddball breeding program. He's very much into stamina, and he's kind of said, to heck with all commercial considerations, I'm just going to stand 2 mile horses such as Americaine, and I'm gonna have all these stamina stuff going on. And he's breeding, and he's actually having quite a bit of success. And, he and Lucas previously had classic success with Oxbow, and this colt, Bravado, right on the same pattern, is something I'm sure they're looking for the Belmont. And, Lucas would love nothing more than to have another classic winner for Brad Kelly.
Well, they're doing so many things right. It's really wonderful, and a story that can't be applauded enough. What has happened with Calumet? So, Sid, this was fabulous as always, and I appreciate it. We'll I'm going to see you between now and Saturday.
Yeah, I'll probably be out tomorrow. I might come out today. Probably be at tomorrow, Friday, and then I'll be at the races Saturday as well.
Awesome.
A tip that day, B Jersey in the Met Mile.
There's some people that very much agree with you, and I, in fact, one of them might be sitting was it Mike? Was it you? Who was it that liked B Jersey this morning?
Someone told me they did. Yeah, the second time I've heard that today.
Also, the
50 fact. The 50 factor in this is that Mr. 50 is actually flying in for the race, and usually when he flies in for the race, it's a big numbers bet, you know, in terms of returns.
Yes. Well, and I've been in too many far-flung locales when Charlie's there, whether it's California, Arkansas, Saratoga. So that may be a signal. I'll see.
Yeah, exactly.
Tremendous. Thank you so much.
All right, you got it, Steve. I'll see you out there.
Absolutely. Sid Fernando, everybody. Follow Sid, under Sid, and Sire Watch as well. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillendale Farm. And, of course, Hillendale well represented throughout these 3 days.